Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'm speaking with my friend Zugby Zugby from Bethlehem, Palestine. This is a project of www.beatitudecenter.org, where you can find many other podcasts and regular Zoom programs on the nonviolence of Jesus, practicing nonviolence, and working for a more just, more nonviolent world. So let's begin, as usual, with a little prayer. So I invite everyone listening just to take a deep breath and just to relax and notice how you're feeling today as we begin. And let's together enter into the presence of the God of peace who loves you infinitely, personally, and everyone everywhere. And we welcome the risen nonviolent Jesus here with us. And just take a moment to ask for the grace to follow the nonviolent Jesus more faithfully and to do God's will. God of peace, thank you for all the many blessings of life, love, and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect together with Zugby on your call to follow the nonviolent Jesus and work for a more nonviolent, more just world. Bless us, inspire us, disarm us, touch us, strengthen us, and send us out to do your will, to do our part, to help end poverty, racism, greed, injustice, war, occupation, genocide, fascism, nuclear weapons, and environmental destruction. In particular, to help us to do our part to end the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, the war in Iran and Lebanon, and the long-time horrific occupation of Palestine, that we might all seek your Jewish vision of shalom and be your holy beatitude people, your holy peacemakers, and welcome your reign of universal love, nonviolence, and peace on earth. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, friends, it's a blessing to welcome one of the great peacemakers of our times, my friend Zugby Zugby from Bethlehem, Palestine. Zugby, you won't remember this, but I first met you around 1990 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence in Santa Cruz, California, where we were both visiting with a great hero of nonviolence from Sicily, our friend Danilo Dolci. Zugby has been a guest before on the Beatitude Center, and I last saw him at the Vatican at one of our global conference on nonviolence. Zugby is a legendary Palestinian Christian activist and teacher of nonviolence. As you know, the U.S.-backed and funded Israeli occupation of Palestine continues to crush our Palestinian sisters and brothers with ongoing home demolitions, human rights violations, violence of every kind, even as Israel itself, like the U.S., moves deeper into fascism. I've been going to Palestine, Israel throughout my life, and just very glad to be here today with Zugby. Zugby Zugby is the founder and director of the WIAM Center, the Palestinian Conflict Transformation Center in Bethlehem, a place I've visited several times. But he's also at the same time the president of the International Fellowship of Reconciliation, the oldest peace group in the world. I used to be the director of the U.S. branch, the Fellowship of Reconciliation. You can look up the WIAM Center at this website, alasla.org. I'll spell that, alasla.org. And the International Fellowship of Reconciliation website is ifor.org. WIAM is widely recognized as a place of nonviolent conflict resolution that helps Palestinians in the day-to-day struggle for justice and peace. So, Zugby, welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast.
Thank you, Reverend John, and how much I am pleased to meet again, you know, at this moment. And, you know, when I see you and I saw your email, I have been uplifted, you know, and through your communication, you are telling me we are not alone. We are part of this global family that helps to see each other as a humans. And that's, in a way or another, a kind of compassion, empathy, and solidarity that we are in dire need nowadays.
Wonderful. Great blessing to be here. Thank you for saying yes. Thanks for speaking with me. And I know it's real late, your time. And I know, we both know, there's a million things to talk about, but I just want to dive into the deep end and just start with the present moment. And maybe some of our listeners could go and look up my Zoom presentation discussion with Zugby, which was about 2 or 3 years ago on YouTube, if you want to find out more background. But let's start with the current reality for you today in Bethlehem and for all the Palestinians, and in particular to the survivors in Gaza. Tell us, we're mainly Catholics and Christians and activists, people of goodwill listening. What would you like us to know? Tell us about what's happening right now.
No. What's happening right now is not easy at all, the least to say. You know, we are living in cantons, in reservations, separated each reservation from each other. And as we live in Bethlehem, you know, give you an example, this is the first time in history that Bethlehem and Jerusalem is separated. In the last 2,000 years, never happened, except nowadays. It is easier for me to sleep in Ottawa, New York, any capital of the world, rather than to be in Jerusalem to visit my family members, or to go to my friends, or to go to the holy places, to go to the Holy Sepulchre, or to be walking in the old city. Bethlehem itself becomes a smaller area, smaller reservation, if you'd like to say, surrounded by many settlements, at least 23 settlements, and many outposts. In the recent time, there are 3 outposts are erected, one just in near Beit Sahur, where the shepherds feed, and other 2 a little bit further. The idea is that we are living in such a situation since 1967, and the plight of the Palestinians since 1948. What to say? That we are really in big prison as well as small prison. The whole West Bank is a big prison. Needless to talk about Gaza Strip, which is a concentration camp, if we'd like to say. And what I see now is a process to liquidate the Palestinian cause through ethnic cleansing, through more confiscation of land, building settlements, and create new facts on the ground, while the international community is silent. I mean, the international bodies like UN and other groups are not doing it the way they should do in rendering justice. Nowadays, we see more prisoners, we see more demolishing of houses, and on top of that, we are exposed to all kinds of violence, state-sponsored violence, settlers' violence, environmental violence, all kinds of violence. Besides, we are not able to move freely in this reservation called the whole West Bank. Needless to say, there is no corridor between West Bank and Gaza. Gaza itself is the worst scenario. There are more killing, more destruction of houses, no life at all. And many people are leaving from Gaza, as same in the West Bank. In Bethlehem itself, more than 200 families left in the last few months. And it is really part of the policy that Palestine is a people without land, and the Zionist movement is a people the Jews are a people without land. So we see lots of practices that not only humiliate the Palestinians, but they will tell us that you are not allowed to continue your life in Bethlehem or in any parts of the West Bank. We signed Oslo, for example, and now the new government, the right-wing government in Israel, is revoking many of the Oslo accords. Although many Palestinians were not happy, but they accepted it. For example, yesterday they talked about revoking Oslo accords in Hebron. In Bethlehem area, more than 87% of the land has been confiscated under the Israeli control, whether settlements or military or bypass road for the settlers. So the situation is moving from worst to the worst, and we are not sure what will happen tomorrow, what will be the next step for any confidence-building measures, any ceasefire, any kind of ending the occupation, any kind of liberation, or enjoying the basic human rights for our people.
Well, there you are in the center of it all in Bethlehem, and you long ago created the WIAM Center for Nonviolence. Now, for all those who are listening, tell us about why you did that, what you do, and what that journey has been like. And then I'll ask you about your own personal story.
I have been activist for a long time, since I was a kid. I learned a lot about nonviolence, nonviolent struggle through my elderly and through my mom. And as I was a student activist, I was always elected to be in the government, student government, in the high school as well as the university, where I practiced the struggle through nonviolence, and I practiced mediation through nonviolent ways. And I have learned a lot from leaders in the world, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, people like John Deere, people like Scott Kennedy, God bless him.
Yes.
And many heroes in my life. I learned from different people, from different faiths, from different walks of life. So after I graduated from Notre Dame University, I worked in the Middle East Council of Churches, World Council of Churches, and then I was not allowed to go to Jerusalem. Despite that I was working in these places, I was volunteering and I was a social activist and continued to do that until I'm not allowed to go to Jerusalem because permit system. Permit system didn't allow me to continue my work, so I decided to establish, to found a center called Palestinian Conflict Resolution Center, and lately I call it Palestinian Conflict Transformation Center. Mm-hmm. And what I do there, I invest in relationship among people. I want my people to live their life, to know their rights, and to create a kind of relationship different than any time where we would like to have cooperation, to understanding each other, and to work for culture of acceptance, and to help them to transform the anger, to transform the garbage of hate. And, you know, the backbone of our activity at that time, to resolve conflict nonviolently, to resolve, any dispute through ADR, alternative to dispute resolution, and to invest in the healthy relationship among people. So while we are, solving conflicts, we become like the X-ray for the people, you know, to know what is going on in our society. And then we have a proactive approach as well as reactive approach. Reactive approach to deal with issues that we found in dealing with people and resolving their conflicts, and proactive approach to help them to build our society based on, you know, separation of the three powers, to create civil society, to empower women, to help kids to have trauma coping and hopefully to trauma healing, to help youth to, you know, assume leadership, to, you know, invest in their positive power, and to help them see different approach through training, through exposing our youth to the different activities in the world, to the civil rights movement in the States, to, you know, the conflict resolving mechanism that happened in North Ireland, as well as learning from the struggle of people in the past, like the South African blacks against the apartheid regime. So we become students of the world in nonviolence, in conflict transformation, in learning from them in order to learn as well as practice and to share our situation with others. When I say sharing our situation, that doesn't mean we are against any people. We are exposing the atrocities of the occupation, opening up for our people to see the world, as well as to ask people to be in solidarity with us and to join our struggle for humanity, since we believe that we all, as a global citizens, and we live in a global village. Mm. So we have programs for children, youth, women, and young men. Some people say, why you are, you know, spreading like that? Because we are a community-based society, and the family is a viable socioeconomic unit. With women, we work on gender equality, gender justice. We work also on UN Security Council Resolution 1325, talks about women, peace, and security. With the youth, we try to teach and learn from them, as well as share with them about conflict transformation, compassionate listening, human rights, you know, training workshops, seminars, conferences, and all of that. So we are really, in a way or another, to create hopefully more leadership in youth, as well as with children, to have trauma coping, to help them air out their frustration, to move forward towards the world in more open eyes. But I tell you, many of these things that we do become very difficult to practice, as well as, you know, many young people say, where is the international law? Where are the human rights? What happened to the 4th Geneva Convention? Because with the politics of Israel really is really creating unhealthy conditions for us and also for the international community, make it difficult for people to be in solidarity with us. And what I talk about occupation doesn't only demonize us, but also demonize Jews.
Well, thank you so much, Zuckby, for all your amazing work and all your colleagues there at the William Center for Nonviolence in Bethlehem, and I hope everyone will check out their website. I want to ask you, since you're talking to many Christians and Catholics and peace activists here in the United States, but also around the world, but what you would hope from us as Christians to do, in particular as the United States continues to fund the ongoing genocide and all that fallout in Gaza, but the horrors of the occupation. You mentioned the settler violence that continues every day. Zuckby, I always thought, since I first went to Palestine in 1982, what I was taught from your friends was the plan is to get rid of all Palestinians, just to move them out one way or the other, to kill them or force them to leave. And it seems to me these Israeli Zionist movement with U.S. funding is right on track. What would you how would you like us to respond? What, I mean, you know, I know it's a big question, and but I want to hear what you think.
Thank you for this meaningful question. I believe what we are expecting from our Christian sisters and brothers, to be our brothers and sisters, to walk in our shoes, to be for justice, not as I used to say, for just us, no, justice for all people who are oppressed, for all communities, you know. And I think first thing I'd like them to come and visit, observe, reflect, and act. Saint Jerome, my compatriot, used to say that there are five gospels, four in the New Testament, and the fifth is when you visit the land and meet the people. And I tell you, I'm not a theologian. I'll ask for forgiveness rather than permission. You are the sixth gospel. You help me to live my faith through your questions, through your relations, through your spirituality, through your prayers and warm thoughts. And I believe to come to the land to see it. You have been there in 1982. And it was really more hopeful time than now. You know, nowadays, you know, the land is expropriated. First of all, what I would like to see, it is a halt of all the aid to Israel and link it to human rights. Stop the aid to Israel. Stop supporting Israel, you know, with its aggression, with its weapons, with its, you know, policies. We need to see that all the relationship with Israel is based on human rights records. Second, I'd like to see a special relationship with the Palestinian people, and mainly the Palestinian Christians, who are endangered species. You know, in the past, we used to say we compose 25%, 20%, 15%, now less than 1% now. And help us not to have our people immigrate. Yes, I know people looking for a better life, but help them to stay, to have steadfastness and resilience through your compassion, through your empathy, and through your solidarity. We are part of this extended Christian family, and we have 13 hierarchies of Christian leadership in Palestine. And I believe all of this are not able to help the less than 40,000 Christians in the West Bank, Gaza, East Jerusalem to stay, are not able to help them to be with strong faith in the Holy Land. I don't want the Holy Land to be museums. I don't want to be our area full of museums without people. Bethlehem is really struggling hard to keep its population. And I'm afraid if this continues, less Palestinian Christians will be in the land. Yes, and that's a problem. We don't have, you know, any grudges against anyone, but I like to see Palestinians enhance the presence of all Palestinians, Christians and Muslims, but also I would like to see my Christian brothers and sisters maintain in the land and witness for Christ, work for justice, and of course, commit to peace and reconciliation based on justice.
Thank you. That's beautiful. So you're such a hero to me and so many of us, because on top of living there and struggling and resisting personally and with all the people of Bethlehem and the Palestinians, and this heroic work and center and all your work. You're now, Zugby, the president of the oldest international peace group in the world, the International Fellowship of Reconciliation, which I urge everyone to look up. As you know, I was the head of the FOR branch in the U.S. in the 90s. And Gandhi and Dr. King and Dorothy Day were all intimately involved, and I attended many I-4 meetings in the U.S. and Europe. I don't know how you do all of this, but we don't have too much time, but tell us briefly about the International Fellowship of Reconciliation.
International Fellowship of Reconciliation is the oldest peace group in the whole world and mainly started in Europe. It has 71 member organizations, branches, groups, and affiliates from at least 40 countries. And we work hard to create a better life for people in different pieces of the world, in different areas, especially where there are wars in these places. And it seems there is no single place that has no war, no conflict. So we hope, and this is our dream, is to educate for peace and nonviolence for all children in the world.
Wow. We
hope and dream that all religious leaders preach the refusal of war, terrorism, violence, and promote the non-violence as a unique way for the humanity. We also would like to see the right for peace that voted by the UN implemented for all human beings around the world. Of course, with the threat of nuclear wars here and there, we dream and we work towards a world without nuclear arms. This is very important. We try to support the conscientious objectors in Ukraine and Russia and different parts of the world because we want to see people advocating for interreligious dialogue, for nuclear disarmament. We would like to see all of that. This is a dream, but are we able to reach that? I believe the struggle will continue.
Thank you.
Only nowadays. In the past, we learned from Martin Luther King and all the people that Gandhi, and we continue to learn from people nowadays. Hopefully, we will be able one time to refuse war and build peace based on justice.
So check out ifor.org to learn more about the International Fellowship of Reconciliation. There's so much to talk about, Zugby. I got a couple of more big questions in the short time we have left. So here you are in the middle of Palestine, an advocate of nonviolence, and you uphold consistently a vision of nonviolence, which is the Jewish vision of shalom and Jesus's vision in the Sermon on the Mount. Can you say a little bit about your understanding of nonviolence, whether how you define it or how you hope we might move towards becoming people of nonviolence around the world? And I know you organized this through this locally through WEOM and globally through I-4. But just say some advice for all of us in the U.S. and elsewhere about nonviolence.
I believe
general.
I learned from different leaders of the world. So when we talk about nonviolence, simply I can say to have, dialogue among people, to see arms of dialogue replacing dialogue of arms once and for all, because we are all related. We are brothers and sisters in this global village. Stop all kinds of violence against people. to work for culture of acceptance, to accept others as they are, do not do harm to anyone, to preach and work agape on all levels, and on top of that, to struggle against injustice. As Martin Luther King says, injustice anywhere is a fringe on justice everywhere. So we will work together, and hopefully when we talk about nonviolence, to be helping us to transform ourselves, you know? Because when you are engaged in the nonviolent movement, yes, you know more about the theory, about the practice, about the theology, about the literature, but there is internal inner struggle of transformation that leads you to purify your approach regarding your sisters and brothers in the community. And for us, you know, the other is a sister or brother, and the enemy is a friend in the waiting. This is, I can summarize my concept of nonviolence. Of course, the strongest leader that I follow is our Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, let me ask you about Jesus next then. As you know, and thank you for that beautiful answer. As you know, I've called this podcast the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. And what I've been trying to promote is Gandhi's incredible statement long ago that Jesus was the most active practitioner of nonviolence in the world, and the only people in the whole world who don't know that Jesus is nonviolent are Christians. So give me some of your thoughts or key points about the nonviolence of Jesus as you understand it.
You know, of course, he talked about love and agape among people, and he asked us to love each other, and also through practice to struggle against injustice. Where he separates between people and the system. He has been, our Lord, soft on the people, but tough on the system. When he went to the temple, when he saw the money changers there, when he saw those who really spoiled the place, he turned over the tables and so on, but he didn't harm anyone, you know? And this is a message by itself. And he said, who slaps you on one of your cheeks, turn him to other. It is a way of resilience. You know, it's a way you cannot humiliate me. You cannot really kill me unless I am cooperating with you. He is defending the widow. And he came and he told us, I have come to preach the good news, to release the captives, and to visit the sick. You know, this is the social gospel that I believe, which is the nonviolent way of Jesus. In a way or another, he told us to be like the salt, the yeast, and the light. You know, the salt, yes, we are a small in number, but we could be part of this community by being present, by being alert to help the others. And Jesus said, whatever you do for the least of my brothers and sisters, you are doing it for me. And of course, don't hate, don't retaliate. This is very important. Even when he was at the cross, he said, God, forgive them because they don't know what to do. I am not able to reach to that point. But this is where I try to walk in the shoes of my Lord in order to work for nonviolent struggle, to be a purified person following the steps of Jesus. It's not easy, mm-hmm. but it is a way. It is the belief.
That's really beautiful. Thank you so much, Zugbe. You've been at this your whole life. And here you are plugging away all over the world and speaking to us. What sustains you these days on your journey as we're all getting older in the struggle?
You know, sometimes I'm doubtful, of course. And there is a kind of evaluation makes me stronger. You know, when I evaluate and look in the past, listen to the people of wisdom and learn from them. You know, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8 says, we are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair. My faith sustains me. My family who support my work also sustains me. The community that I live in sustains me. My kids who are born here and there would like to be living in this area, despite that they have enjoyed the freedom of the world being in the States. People like you, to be frank with you, who really empower our walk and voice our voiceless to the world. You know, people like you are our renewable source of hope. Hope will not disappoint us. We will continue to be hopeful. And for me, when I talk about nonviolence, hope for me is a form of nonviolent struggle. And hope and faith are two faces of the value that I learned from my mother, because I cannot live without hope. I cannot live without faith. Yet, at the same time, I recognize the difficulties that we live in. And many times people say, how are you? How you describe your life? I'll say, every day walking the Via Dolorosa, the stations of the cross. But remember that when we are walking in these steps, in these stations, regardless to which one we are now, we'll go to the last station, which is in the Holy Sepulchre. The tomb is empty, and Jesus resurrected. This is the hope that we are equipping ourselves with. There is resurrection. And to every crucifixion, there is resurrection. Yes, I believe in the theology of resurrection, but also I believe one day with our friends, with our coalitions, with our affiliates, that we will conquer the injustices on all levels, economically, politically, socially, religiously, and we are going to be the beloved community that Martin Luther King talks about.
Thank you so much for that statement. And thank you so much, Zugby Zugby, for speaking with me today. And thank you, friends, for listening to this episode of the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. Again, check out Zugby's website. You can just Google Williams Center in Palestine, Bethlehem, and the International FOR. You can hear more podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom programs at beatitudescenter.org, where you can also sign up to receive our free e-blast with news about upcoming podcasts and Zooms. And please tell your friends and coworkers about this podcast. And a little plug, I hope you all get my new book, Universal Love, Surrendering to the God of Peace. If you're on Substack, look me up at Father John Deere. So may the God of peace bless you all. Keep on following the nonviolent Jesus and resisting war, fascism, and injustice, and working for a more just, more nonviolent world. See you next time. God bless you.